Spiegel and Holmes.
First of all, congratulations. You know, it's nice to have a couple new faces at the Score. And no, I'm just kidding.
Afternoons on the Score.
You guys keep talking about, you know, building depth, but at the end of the day, you still need that dude. Where are you guys going to find that dude? How do you, it just seems like you guys don't have a plan to land that kind of guy.
I think there's different paths, Joe. I think, you know, internal development is the way we're going to attack that. You know, I think if you look at, you know, somebody like Modest last year, nobody thought he would finish the year he did. Now, I'm not putting any kind of undue expectations on Modest, but, you know, there's other players in this building on this team who, if they continue to develop, continue to work on a daily basis, they may get there. And we have the resources in place, the coaching staff, player development to support that.
That was Mark Eversley talking about developing from what you already have on the roster.
Got to find a star. Can't you see the star right here, Lawrence? Can't you see it?
But you drafted Modest last year. So, like, it's not... I have some semantic issues with what the Bulls have been trying to say over the last couple of days. Like, he was someone that wasn't in your organization, and there were a lot of people who did think Modest Bouzelas was going to turn into the player that he turned into at the end of the year.
I think they're
going
to lean on that, which is why they drafted themselves a French project at
right,
12.
But then for Mark to say no one could have expected, a lot of people expected Modest. Okay.
You're going to hurt yourself.
It's just, it's... Come on. Like, there were people who looked at that guy and saw him in summer league and were like, oh, the Bulls may have gotten themselves something. And never mind. Keith Smith is joining us now here on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Check out his work on Spot Rack or the Front Office Show. Keith, thanks for joining us. We're in a weird place when it comes to the Bulls. And the place that we're in is we're on the line of anger and apathy. And it's very easy to cross over to the apathy, but we're trying not to. What did you think of what they did pre-draft and in the draft?
Yeah, I think in the draft, I don't have a problem with drafting Noah Senge. I think that's a fine pick where they were at. There wasn't anybody screaming out to me as like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they passed on, you know, the players who went behind him. Carter Bryant maybe could have argued might have been a better pick. Maybe Derek Queen. There's rumors out there that maybe they passed on that trade up package from the Pelicans, which is a little scary if they did, because that was such a good return that they could have gotten there. But I think that pick is okay. I didn't love the idea of, I can't remember if it was Artoris or Mark who came out and said, this guy's going to be back. And this guy basically rattled off the whole roster. And it's like,
it was Mark.
What are we saying in that comment? Like, we saying we're good. We're just not going to make any changes, or, you know, because then if you do, like, where, why did you say it? If you don't, you know, like, are you basically telling people tune in October and see where we're at? So it just feels like they're a little stuck right now and not moving in any one direction.
I think you landed on the most frustrating thing from yesterday in terms of the audio and that moment, because he said, look, he rattled off a bunch of players, including Coby White. And I like Coby White a lot, but that means you're not even going to entertain trade talks for Coby White. And he rattled off Josh Giddey as somebody who's definitely going to be back. So at all costs, they're bringing Josh Giddey back. So yeah, it does feel like some status quo. Can you let people know what that trade package was? Because the Pelicans jumped up and they gave up an unprotected pick from next year, right? And what, again, will be a good and deep draft.
Yeah, so the Pelicans, what he said was Joe Dumars said he started calling teams at 9 until he landed with Atlanta, who had the 13th pick, that agreed to take in the 23rd pick and then an unprotected pick, which is the best of the Pelicans or the Bucks next year, who both have a lot of questions about where they're going to be as teams, that was what it was ultimately to move up there. And they moved up to that one spot behind the Bulls at 13. And no reason I'm reporting that is because Joe Dumars said it. So I don't know why he has a lot of reason to not say that. So that's where, you know, if that is true, that's tough. That's a tough look of, you know, you passed up on moving back one pick and getting an unprotected pick from two teams that there's a chance things don't go well for them next year. That's pretty tough.
It is tough, and it makes you wonder, like, what they're doing from a decision-making standpoint and some of the choices that they've made to go back to make trades to try and rectify picks that they've given away. And it just seems like they're playing from behind a lot. The news this morning about Masai Ujiri was a little shocking. One, I'd love to know why you think this happened in Toronto. And two, even though the Bulls have a fully staffed front office, should Michael Reinsdorf entertain the idea of making a call to Masai Ujiri?
Yeah, to the first part of it, sounds like Masai Ujiri and the leadership of the group that owns the Raptors have not been necessarily on the same page for a little while now. Masai Ujiri was not, I think there's a misconception of how involved he's been in the day-to-day running of the Raptors front office. His title there was president of the team, not just like president of basketball operations and all these other fancy things that we call what we used to just call a general manager. He was the president of the team and also a vice chairman. And Bobby Webster has been running that team day-to-day for a while now. So I think there was a sense of, hey, we're no longer on the same page with things. Because you're in this elevated role, there's an expense attached to this. It's just time to move on. And the timing is weird in between the draft with free agency in a couple days. That part optically is a little off. But I think this was headed in this direction. As far as should the Bulls call him? I mean, sure, I guess. There's been multiple times where I feel like the Bulls could have called on people, but it seems like they like the guys they have and they're content to move forward with those guys and have faith in them. So I don't know that they're going to make that kind of call.
So, yeah, we don't think so either. And the way you just described it, it's how do you look at the power structure and what is perceived to be the plan that the Bulls are executing here? Because it sure does seem like, you know, guys getting extended for mediocrity or maybe just above mediocrity, but with not a lot of hope for bigger things. Like, how does the league look at where how the Bulls are structured and what their overall plan seems to be?
Confusion is one way I would put it. It feels like a lot of people around the league are, is their goal to be somewhere between 7 and 10 every year? Because if they are, that's probably where they're going to be, is somewhere between 7 and 10. That's, you know, I did the quote of we lost a hard fought game or a heartbreaker in the play-in. Like, no one cares if you lost a hard fought game in the play-in tournament. I think Bulls fans are smart enough. They've watched a lot of basketball. They'd rather be the 13th team in the league than the, you know, team that was 10th and lost in the play-in tournament, because at least then you have a better shot of moving up in the lottery. But it feels like there is a sense of just be good enough to be in the mix. But why are we going to go all in and go get guys? And there seems to be a bit of misplaced faith in our young group or the guys we've either drafted or acquired of they're going to get there. They're going to get there. And then what happens is, oh, they didn't get there. Now we have to move them. And it's either move them when there's not as much value or you're moving them, not always at a loss, but just, all right, we need to move them because now we have to move them. And that's where it gets tough. Like, you look at Patrick Williams, they hung on so long that now it's become, if you trade Patrick Williams, you're not getting good value in any kind of deal for Patrick Williams. And he's got a lot of years left on his contract. And that gets really tough to deal with.
Keith, how common is this around the league? Are there other teams that have this just try to be decent approach around the league?
There have been, but it's over, I would say, let's say the past 5 to 6 years, I think we've seen a shift in mindset in the NBA, and it really is driven from ownership on down of, all right, we want to win. We want to win at a high level. Like, look at the Washington Wizards. They were in the position the Bulls are in for basically 2 or 3 decades of, we're just going to be good enough to be a playoff team. Maybe if everything goes right, we win a round or two and, you know, off we go. But for the most part, it was just be a playoff team. Then 2 years ago, they bring in a new front office. And part of that new front office even agreeing to come in was, You have to let us do our thing. We have to be allowed to tear this team down and really start all over. They very candidly said 1 year ago, we are still in the teardown phase. After they had already traded Bradley Beal out, after they had already moved on from some guys, it was, we're still not even at the bottom of this yet. And what Wizards fans' reaction was, good. We have a direction. We are not no longer just content to chase being a play-in team, be the eighth seed. We have a direction now, and we can deal with it. We'll watch the kids. They've got all these young kids, and you know what? They stunk last year, but I know more Wizards fans are like, it was far more enjoyable to watch those guys develop than watch some team chase trying to be 9 or 10 in the conference.
One of my biggest fears, Keith, is that they'll look around at the Eastern Conference and go, oh, well, Dame's got an Achilles. Tatum's got an Achilles. Halliburton's got an Achilles. We'll get better because of the attrition of the other team. And I don't find that to be satisfying as an NBA fan. And it bothers me that I even think that they do.
I'm with you on that, because if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers or New York Knicks and you're like, man, we're not going to do a whole lot. You know what? We're already pretty good. We're pretty close. Let's go. I live in Orlando, so I've been around the Magic a lot. The Magic used to kind of sit around where the Bulls did for a little while. The Magic have then bottomed out, built up through the draft. And this year, what did they do? Let's go get Desmond Bane. Let's really, that's not an all-in move. It's not a, here's every single pick we've ever got and all these young guys, but it's a pretty big move to bolster what the young core has already grown into, and let's go forward. There's a world where the Bulls could do that. They've got some nice young players. They've got some guys I like, but they don't seem willing to go that way, nor do they seem willing to, all right, you know, Vucevic is a nice player, but what's he doing on a 35-win team? He'd be a nice, you know, center on a team that's trying to win 48 or 50 games and be a playoff team, or a really, you know, good guy if we could get the right deal for a team that's trying to be a little bit more. You know, you could do that. And that's where it gets a little stuck. And the thing that kind of bums me out for them is they don't have like singularly bad contracts. Even Patrick Williams, I know people are down on it, but it's not awful money. And they could be in a position where you could have packaged together some of those contracts and went and got a guy who could maybe lift you up. Or the other option is go the other direction, really bottom out, go super young and try to build up that way. But instead, it's just let's kind of keep trying to reload around the same kind of good but not great players. And that's why every year they're landing somewhere around the play-in tournament.
See, that's the thing. It's like the way that you guys are talking about, like afraid that they would just kind of, you know, try to get a little bit better in a sagging East. If you're going to do that, they could have tried to get a lot better.
Yes.
And they didn't do that. They didn't do that either with the caliber and readiness of the pick. You know, you could have drafted somebody who could maybe help you a little bit right away, or the kind of trades that you're talking about. So they're not doing either. They're staying in their middle without trying to get a little better and compete, and without trying to bottom out.
Yeah, and I guess in the draft, too, again, the value of drafting Noah Senge where they did is fine, but there's now a little bit of overlap with Modest Bouzelis, who I like quite a bit. I think he's going to be a pretty good player, but I don't know that him and Senge are going to be your forward combo moving forward that's going to take you to the next level. I'm a little worried about those two together. So that part does start to turn it a little where are we going with this? If are we just going to draft not the same guy, but there, and I know you played the clip before I came on. I heard the tail end of it there. Like, I do think a lot of people thought Modest Bouzelis was going to be okay. I don't know that anybody thought that was necessarily a bad pick when it was made. I think everybody was like, oh, yeah, he's going to take some time because he's a young kid. He only played at G League Ignite, which was a messy situation. But I think a lot of people were high on the potential there. So I'm not sure that's the selling point for, hey, let's do it again with another guy. Now, if Bouzelis had really popped already, then you could be like, all right, hey, I trust it. We've already got our guy, but now you get this overlap. I'm just not sure that's where I wanted to go.
Hey, so Keith, we heard this was going to be a really active and possibly volatile offseason. We've seen the Durant trade. We've seen the Bane trade. We saw some of the movement that happened on draft night. Free agency starts on Monday. You wrote about it with all the cap space that's available. Is there going to be more trade activity? How big might it get? And I mean, I don't know if we should expect the Bulls to be in it or not. Maybe not from the sound of it, but how active is it going to be?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really active. I do want to couch it with, we've seen like five blockbuster trades already. So I don't want, you know, it's funny. We had people on our show, front office show today being like, when are things going to happen? What do you mean? Like, things have already happened. Like, we've already seen a lot of stuff. But I do think it's going to be active. The Brooklyn Nets are the only team with any kind of meaningful cap space, and they've got in the range of $40 million. Nobody else has cap space this summer. So if you want to improve your team, the way you do it is going to be through trades. And there are a couple teams that are sitting there kind of looking at the landscape and saying, hey, if we hang on to guys, maybe we make a play-in tournament push. But if we move a guy right now as an early mover this summer, we might get more value. Then later, when there are another six, seven sellers on the market, if we're an early seller, maybe we can make some moves. And then you have, because the league feels pretty wide open, the fact that the Pacers pushed the Thunder to game seven, I haven't met a single person who thinks the Thunder are a not deserving champion, but I also haven't met anybody who said, well, they're inevitable. That's it. They're going to be there every single year. We're all playing for second. Teams feel like they can beat them. The league feels wide open. That's why you're going to see teams kind of gearing up and going for it. And I think that's going to make for a pretty wild summer.
What's the number in your mind, since Josh Giddey is an RFA, that the Bulls should let him walk if he gets on the open market?
Yeah, the number is probably going to be a lot higher and maybe a little shocking than what I think most people would think it is. Because when you get into a position like with Josh Giddey, you have to factor in where the cap growth has gone. So I think if it gets much north of 25, maybe 28 million, you have to start thinking like, all right, we're going the other way. Here's the challenge. Who's giving him that kind of offer? I don't know that there's a team out there that's going to give it to him. And that's where I think the Bulls, it kind of works a little bit more in their favor, maybe more towards the 25 million range for a guy like Josh Giddey than getting up into the 28, 30 million. Cause they just don't think the Nets are parachuting in with an offer like that. Nor do I think a team's coming in with anything like that through sign and trade.
If the number is over, let's say it's 20, let's call it 25 million. Do you think that that's good money for the Bulls to extend Giddey?
I think it's okay because they don't have a lot of long-term salary locked up on their books. And the important thing to note is a salary that's less than $30 million, I mean, sounds crazy, right? Because that was close to a max deal. That's the lowest end max deal next season is $38.6 million. So you're well under that. If you're under $30 million, you're talking about 20% of the cap or so, and then it won't grow as much as the cap will grow over the next couple years. You can pitch the idea of, hey, just, you know, don't do that. Let's go into next summer with a whole crap ton of cap space because they would only have a couple deals on the books and they could really be in a good spot to go after people. But we kind of talked about it. That's not what they do. So I'm in favor of locking up Josh Giddey to a reasonable number. I think 25-ish, you know, maybe a little more is a fairly reasonable number for him. Because I'm just not sure they're going to jump in and go spend a whole, you know, ton of cap space.
You know, it feels, frankly, exactly like the conversation around Zach LaVine as a restricted free agent the first time when he signed the Sacramento offer sheet. Yeah, they should because they don't have a lot of other guys lined up. And then when it was time for Zach to be a max, yeah, they should because he's basically a max. And then you end up trading him when the value has gone down. And before you know it, 7 years have gone by and you're still the Bulls. That's what it feels like, frankly, Keith.
That's why you have to be careful. You can't do the max on the next one, right? And by the time we're to the next one, a max for Josh Giddey is going to be like $65 million a year. So that's where you got to be like, well, hold on now. Now we're not doing that. Like we're gonna hang out here a little bit, and we'll let this play out a little. That's where you have to be really responsible because in the new world, not to make this like a Taylor Swift song, but the NBA is living in their apron era, right? Like you have to be really cautious now.
The second apron is killer.
That's it. You have to be cautious of the guys you max out. You max out the wrong guys, all of a sudden you're sunk, and then you might be picking near the top of the lottery just because you are, and you might be bad just because you're bad. But you may be like, we got to nail these picks because we're stuck in cap jail for a while.
Man, this was so much fun. Thanks for all of the information. This was top-notch stuff, man. Keith, you're good people, and we'd love to talk to you as we get closer to the regular season.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Anytime you need me.
Thanks, Keith.
Keith Smith from Spot Rack in the front office show.
Didn't make me feel better, though.
No. He wasn't there to make us feel better. He was there to tell us the truth.
Yeah, well, that's sometimes the truth, man.
Truth hurts. But, shout out to Rakim.
But it's still better to have it. It's still better. To stand in one's truth gives you an actual chance to live a meaningful life.
The problem is,
that's what my fortune cookie said today.
I don't think that the Bulls stand in their truth very often. I think that they live at their top one percentile. I think that everything is, well, if this happens and this happens and this happens and this happens and this happens, then we're going to be competitive. And that's what drives me crazy about them.
I thought his example of the Washington Wizards as a team that was doing what the Bulls are doing for a few decades, then had a new front office, which got clearance from ownership to go ahead and get worse, and said last year openly, we're still in the teardown phase. And the fans were like, all right, we get it. Okay, here we go. That's what it is. It's ownership level. It is a Reinsdorfian situation that a front office has to get clearance to do what they probably should do. And that clearance is not there.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that Michael might be gun shy on it because when Jerry finally did acquiesce with the White Sox on a teardown, that it failed?
Well, but
fail strong.
Failed is too strong. They ended up falling short and having to do it again.
Falling short is a better way to put it.
He might be. Michael, that might be why he's gun shy. He also might be kind of gun shy because they have wonderful attendance and want to keep it that way. And it is a family business and not just a passion project, not just a hobbyist project. And they've also got other stuff they want to do around the stadium that they're doing. And a lot of that is very good and
it's great
and wonderful philanthropic work that they got to keep. They got to keep the money flowing and keep the attendance flowing. I wonder what he would do if he could have a guarantee that the fans would still support a team that's openly tanking. I wonder what he would do. I wonder if he knows that or could trust that.
It's still the NBA, and they still, the Bulls, no matter what, put on a great product. Going to the United Center is still fun, and you know that the biggest stars in the league, and for a while, you know, the Bulls did advertise like that, like, come see Allen Iverson at the United Center. That sort of thing. I don't think that they would see as much of a drop-off as they might fear that they would see.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Washington Wizards attendance in 2024 was 27th out of 30. As an example, since we're having the conversation. And of course, the Bulls were first out of 30. Part of that is due to the size of the United Center.
Sure.
But still, number one in attendance, while the Wizards were 27th. And here we are asking the front office to do what the Wizards have done, but maybe there's not ownership appetite to do it.
Yep, you might be right. You might be right about that.
Lawrence Holmes has been teasing us with a possible road trip for far too long. What? It is nut-cutting time. Are you going or not?
I mean, next Friday would be nut-cutting
time. All right, you gotta set us up.
I checked prices today.
But we have production elements in place for this road trip, and we're going to use them whether you're going or not.
All right, let's do that next. You're on the score.
It's time for the Chase for Disgrace.
I think it's disgraceful, and so does a lot of other people.
What a disgrace.
It's a f***ing disgrace.
That is an absolute disgrace.
Chronicling the 2025 Colorado Rockies chase to become the worst major league team of all time.
It's 23-0.
That's the third Rockies error, and everybody in attendance is either clapping or booing right now.
Even if they finish with 45 wins, they're not going to get the first overall pick. So they even fail wrong.
Can they break the record for futility currently held by the 2024 Chicago White Sox?
Oh, no! Oh, my goodness. The White Sox have just gone full White Sox.
A chase for disgrace with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Here's where things stand. The 2024 White Sox, of course, finished 41-121. The Colorado Rockies are currently 18-63. They're on pace to finish 36-126. They are five games ahead, behind. Behind the White Sox win pace.
Ahead of the pace.
Ahead of the pace if they are chasing disgrace. You're exactly right.
They clearly are.
They are chasing disgrace. And so they would finish 36-126 at this pace. It must be said, though, that the Colorado Rockies started the year 9-50. That's impressive. Since then, they've had an uptick.
So they've gone 9-13?
They've gone 9-13, which is far, far better than,
congratulations,
than 9-50. So maybe they're pacing to, outrun disgrace.
What if they can catch this year's White Sox?
This year's White Sox right now are 26-55. They're on pace to go 52-110. The White Sox would be 11 games better than they were last year. And doesn't it look like it? It does, actually.
Okay.
Lawrence, they're undeniably better than they were last year.
If you say so.
They're still bad, but they're undeniably better than they were last year. And the org as a whole has turned a corner. But that's how we're talking about.
I will agree with you that the organization seems healthier than it was a year ago.
There we go. But the team on the field, just a little bit better. Kyle Teal is here. Grant Taylor is here.
Love it.
So anyway, the Rockies, five games ahead in the chase for disgrace. You have been threatening for months to go to Colorado for one more time through that airport. No, you've got another way to go where you won't go to the airport. But either way,
fly into Colorado Springs.
The White
drive
Sox
up for the game.
They're going to be there next weekend.
Yeah.
4th of July.
Yeah.
Are you going or not?
I don't know.
Come on, man.
The chase for disgrace.
Lawrence is the one-man chase for the chase for disgrace. We've been excited about the idea of you going.
I feel bad because I have talked to other people about maybe coming with me dragged people into it. Like Leisure hit me up last week and he's like, yeah, you know what? If you go, I'll join you out there on the 5th and 6th. And I'm like, no. Like, no one should be joining me for this.
Well, you also like to travel places alone.
I do.
You're cool with that. You do some exploration. You curate a weekend.
Yeah. I can tell you this. I'm not doing that. If I go, I'm going for the game on the 4th, and I'm flying back Saturday morning.
Got you. Just go for one game.
Yeah. I actually really like Coors Field. I still think it's a great ballpark. And I'm sure they'll have a crazy 4th of July fireworks show.
Yeah, they
or something.
Probably will. Probably, especially after they beat down on the White Sox that day.
We don't know. And
Speaks.
Yeah, Speaks. And Tanny, you know what went through my mind? Because tickets are actually fairly cheap. Like I could actually
no way
do this. And
back in the day, they had that section out there called the Rock Pile, right, Lawrence?
Oh,
where
yeah.
I think you go out there basically for free.
No,
or for
I didn't mean to the game. I meant to fly out there, which it only being a week out, the fact that there are cheap flights to go is encouraging.
I wonder what type of promotions they have going on for that Sox and Rocks. I'm going to check right now. This is the first time this has ever been Googled, by the way. Rockies promotional schedule.
With White Sox also in the title.
I will say, Tanny, and I imagine you can relate. As I've been thinking about this, because you know that as Speaks points out, I am culturally a White Sox fan. I have not.
I'm culturally Jewish.
I have not worn White Sox gear in a long time.
Yeah, I haven't seen you in anything here in years.
And so I have a lot. I've been doing a lot of like spring cleaning, and I've been donating clothes and all of this stuff.
Find some good stuff.
I have all sorts of caps. Like I did a whole thing during the pandemic where I would recap the game, and the White Sox were great. Like they were like, "Do you want more caps?" And I was like, "Sure." So I have a bunch of caps that I could wear. My favorite is the Chance the Rapper one. I think that's dope a great White hat. Sox cap.
Yeah.
And I was looking at it today and I was like, if I go, will I feel good? Like, do I need to go neutral cap? Do I need to pick a White Sox cap?
I know what you should do. In a nod to Ray Rayner and Jesse Rogers, you should get a hat with the Rockies on one side and the White Sox on the other.
That is, I mean, there's a bunch of things that Jesse has done in his career that are skeptical. But that is, just, to me, the height of it.
Right, that we did that for Cubs Sox. But you doing that for White Sox and Rockies, you would get on SportsCenter for sure.
House divided.
Oh, the chase for disgrace is led by Lawrence Holmes.
I'm wearing.
We could make you go viral, dude, 100%. We could make this a thing if you go to represent. I wonder if there's other White Sox fans who are going to go. That's actually a hilarious angle for next weekend, which you have smelled for months. Last month, you have smelled it as a possibility.
Yeah, it's just a matter of do you want to do it?
No, I think you do want to do it because here's the promotional schedule for July 4th weekend, okay?
All right.
July 4th, Friday, City Connect Fridays. They wear their different jerseys, so you can see this team in different jerseys. I got to tell you, Rockies.
Man.
More than that.
You know, you haven't lived until you see Michael Tolia in a different City Connect jersey.
Well, speaking of that, so Lawrence mentioned, yes, fireworks on Saturday, and they've got.
It would be Friday, though. Friday would be the day I would watch.
Well, maybe you'll do a long weekend here. Maybe you'll change your plans here that you haven't committed to yet. And then, of course, Sunday, that's the big one. It's Autograph Sunday.
I'm definitely not doing that.
Prior to the game, select players and or coaches will be available for autographs.
Wow.
And who doesn't want to get your baseball filled up with those names?
Can I get a half Larry Walker, half Frank Thomas jersey by next Friday?
See?
House divided.
Now we're getting somewhere.
And then, of course, military appreciation also on that Sunday.
Obviously.
They do have one. Hunter Goodman. I like that dude. That's a good player. And I just named him, and now
John's son, right?
I don't believe so. He's Hunter Pence's name brother, and Hunter Brown. A lot of Hunters around there in MLB. I support the idea of you going. I think we should make Alex Kuhn go with you if you need somebody to go with you.
He's got other plans.
Love Colorado. Yeah, he does. Oh, that's right. Alex is going to go see Flo Rida tonight.
Yes, sir. Let's go.
Just keep talking.
Can I share you this text that I got from my friend who put this whole thing together tonight? We're going with a bunch of people to go see the White Sox and Flo Rida. You ready for this?
Yes, please.
All right, guys. This Friday, we are heading right round to the South Side for our annual White Sox tailgate. In lieu of a May birthday celebration, we found an even better excuse to make this happen: post-game Flo Rida concert. Our expectations for the White Sox team might be low, 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 but these club-level seats can't handle me right now. There's a storm brewing in the air.
Wow.
So we will have to keep an eye on the forecast. But the plan is to be at the parking lot at 4:40 with the game starting at 6:40. I have a good feeling it's going down for real this Friday.
Wow.
Still
this
happening.
Group is about to move, shake, drop. So if you'd rather excuse yourself, that be on you.
Nailed it.
No notes.
I couldn't pass up the opportunity.
No,
Alex has had a couple of really good nights in the city. When saw Tosh last night.
Oh, did you grab those tickets that became available?
No, I actually had previous tickets for my birthday.
Those tickets that became available.
It's a good show.
Like that.
I bet they did. But man, that's tremendous. So you go, just be careful. One time there was a concert that was scheduled.
Yeah,
we were
at that one too.
You're at the Vanilla Ice non-concert?
Uh-huh.
The non-cert featuring Vanilla Ice?
I still don't quite understand why the Iceman didn't perform after the game continued.
Thank you guys for the support, but asking you guys to support the White Sox. All right?
All right, Ice. I think he probably didn't perform because somebody got shot.
No, but my point is that the game continued after someone got shot. Right. Why so didn't the concert?
Because it would go later and stuff. I don't know. But I'm sure Jerry Reinsdorf will give all the answers in his government deposition that is scheduled.
Yeah, because there were some inconsistencies on some things.
Oh, yes.
And the government would like to know what the hell went on over there.
Shot spotter has been questioned much since that particular moment.
Yep. There's been some really interesting reporting around all of that, too.
To summarize, Alex, have a good time. And we need to keep razzing Lawrence until he buys a flight and goes to chase the chase for disgrace.
Chase for disgrace.
Here's one of the things that I'm factoring in, though. Okay. And I can't figure out which is going to be better for the show. Now, my plan is to go to Big Ten Media Day. And that's in 2 weeks. Okay.
Okay.
I'm also considering going out to Summer League for a couple days.
So you got a lot of trips coming up.
That's two Vegas trips in July, which is crazy.
It's too many.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And then there would be this trip. So it would be like,
skip one of the Vegas trips. Skip NBA Summer League. You know yeah, you're
but
gonna, I'm in,
but every look, all of my NBA peeps have been like, you got to go to NBA Summer League, and I've never done it.
All right, then nut up and do all three. Let's go. Come on now. Come on now.
I mean,
you're a man about town.
It would be good for the show to do the two for sure.
And when you go viral while chasing the chase for disgrace.
With my Larry Walker, half Larry Walker, half Frank Thomas jersey.
Yes.
Forget the show, Lawrence. Is it good for you?
Wow.
Well, thank you, Tanny. I appreciate you being the only person who would ask that question.
You'll find out why in a second.
I didn't even consider that.
I don't know, but it might be. It might be some healing between me and the state of Colorado and me and the city of Denver.
Then if it's good for you, it's good for the show.
Oh,
right?
There it is. That's my guy.
Yeah.
That's my guy. Oh, man. Book Shambi had been holding on to something for months. And he finally got a chance to use it yesterday regarding Shota Imanaga. We must discuss and maybe sing next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
You guys are great.
You're right. Thanks, Chris.
We'll send him the book. That is Chris Ranji.
Afternoons on The Score.
Rico did his weekly radio show appearance today on Spiegel and Holmes.
Nico sure did. Shout out to our guy, Boog. Glad that he is feeling better, that he is doing more games, and he is back.
Sounding good, man. Sounding perky.
Looking good.
Having a good time and able to use a Shota nugget. He had told me a while back that he had talked to Shota maybe in the spring or maybe in the first month of the season. And then Shota's been out since what, May?
May 4th.
Yeah, so.
Be with you.
So he's been out. So Boog hasn't been able to use it because you know how it goes, man. When you do that job, you get nuggets and you stockpile them and you never know when you're going to get a chance to use them.
Man, stockpiling nuggets sounds delicious.
Oh, it is delicious. It is.
Thunder nuggets.
So he finally was able to break it out yesterday and I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Shota Imanaga. We'll see if he's going to maybe add another song to his English singing library besides Go Cubs Go. I did ask him through Edwin Stanberry, okay, one other English song, what would you sing? And he answered very quickly, A Whole New World, the theme to Aladdin. I mean, I would pay huge money to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
A Whole New World from Shota Imanaga.
Can almost hear it in my head right now.
Downstairs at T-Mac.
I think next year, Lou Gehrig Day, we get Shota to contribute by singing that song, and people can pay money to get the video.
That's it right there.
You might lead the charge. You might be the one buying the product.
Could you imagine? I mean, I would pay a lot of money to see it, but it's a private video of him doing. I was about to do A Whole New World, and I caught myself, JD. I almost launched into it.
Feel free.
Yeah.
Nobody's listening.
Boog!
A dazzling place I never knew.
Break into song! Why not?
I mean, there could be some legal and financial reasons why he might not.
You think so?
Yeah. Like, we have some ASCAP protection. I don't know if Marquee does.
Oh, actually, that's interesting because, no, all the music they use is, like, canned production music.
So there might there might be a bigger reason why he didn't.
I thought it was pure fear.
It might have been fear.
Just only fear.
But I want to make sure that I look out for my guy Boog here, because there are things you have to consider.
Yeah, you're right. I want to bury him.
He might have cost Marquis like a few thousand dollars to break out in song.
He could take care of it. He's got that Lawrence Holmes money. You know what I mean?
Wow. Is this going to be a whole thing now?
Clearly. Clearly
all
is.
All I asked for was chairs.
Boog could get chairs.
And you got $1 million. That goes to show you, folks.
Ask for chairs, get a mildo. It's the Odyssey way.
Hey, Chicago. What do you say?
Yeah. I do. I mean, that's an amazing answer by Shota Imanaga. Just like that quickly said, oh, yeah, A Whole New World by Aladdin. Just loves it. That's amazing.
It might be one of those things where that was a way that he might have learned some English, is through a song that, like, reached him.
Absolutely. And it could be that Aladdin meant a lot to him as a kid.
How old is the movie Aladdin?
1992.
Okay, so it's as old as he is, right? Because isn't Shota 31 or 32 years old?
It's a good call.
But sure, it would have been shown in his house when he was a kid. Anytime,
sure. It's a big Robin Williams Aladdin guy, maybe. But, I love the answer.
It's more of a Will Smith.
I'll allow that ASCAP caution might have played a role. I won't just ascribe pure fear to the Boogster.
Let's give our guy the benefit of the doubt. Okay. And if it turns out that it was just fear, then okay. But
boom.
But it might have also been him being a responsible broadcaster.
Could be.
Those still exist, I think. We'll see.
You and I are here.
That's true. Stabilizing forces. There's some terrible manager news, and there's some really good manager stories that we have to share. I will share the terrible one with you now. Ron Washington is going to stay on medical leave for the rest of the 2025 season. Just saw that on MLB Network.
Yeah, that sucks,
that makes me
man.
Really sad.
I know. I love Ron Washington.
Me too.
Enjoy the hell out of him. Ray Montgomery is going to remain as the interim manager. The Angels have actually been playing pretty well.
They have. And a couple of his disciples, though, have told some very good stories about other managers. We will share some of that next here on The Score.